Welcome to the Angletopia podcast, the podcast for people who love British travel, history, and culture. I'm your host, Jonathan Thomas, and today is a special bonus episode of the Angletopia podcast outside of the regular numbered sequence because we have a new book out and it was released last week. It is 101 Budget Travel Tips, third edition. This is the galley. It's not the final version, but it's the version I have on hand to do this. And this is the third edition of this book that we have put out. We put out the first one in like 2012 or 2013. And then we put out a second edition just after the pandemic. And so much has changed just in 5 years of British travel that we decided to rip it apart and put out a third edition. And so if you've bought our guidebook before, you're going to want to buy it again. And I'm not just saying that because I want to sell you more books. Now, the brief origin story. I've been traveling to Britain for 25 years, roughly 25 trips. And over those 25 years, I and we have made every expensive mistake in the book. And so this is the guide that you wish someone had handed you before your first trip. And this will guide you on how not to get ripped off on your travels to Britain, how to save money, and how to still have a good time, even if you're traveling on a budget. So this is not just a refresh, an update. I completely ripped this book apart. So like the previous edition of the guidebook, it like a third of the guidebook was little tips on free things to do in various places throughout Britain. I've taken all those out and made a big master list at the end of the book now that has all those free places to do in one big list divided by England, Scotland, and Wales. And that allowed us to write 30 to 40 brand new tips for this book on how to save money on your travels in Britain. So not only have we updated almost every tip in this book, there's 30 to 40 new tips that have never been in the book before. So there's a ton of new content. And actually, if you look at the book, it's like twice as thick as it's a previous edition. Now, so my goal with this special podcast is I just want to guide you through the book. And then I will, I'll do a couple of readings from it, mostly so we can have clips for social media about the new book. Because this is a long-term play for Angletopia. This is one of our key titles that we stock. We sell this all the time. It sells well on Amazon. And so it was time to update it. And it complements well with our previously updated 101 London Travel Tips, which we released last year. And so, and I'll put a link in the show notes. We're actually selling these in a bundle. You can buy both of them and save. But they complement each other well. And with these two, you can basically plan the perfect trip to Britain based on our 25 years of travel advice. Like I said earlier, the travel landscape in Britain has changed substantially, even in the last 5 years since the pandemic. Many things that were done before the pandemic have disappeared. Britain also went through Brexit, which changed travel a little bit for visitors, which we're going to talk about. And overall, it's just, well, in general, has changed over 25 years. It's not the same as it was. I mean, well, my first trip to Britain was in 2001, before 9/11. That magical time when you could walk into the airport and not need a plane ticket to go to the gate and say goodbye to somebody. And so, like, things have changed so much in that small period of time. But one thing that hasn't changed is Britain, or at least the sites that Americans want to see and do in Britain. Those places haven't changed much because many of them have been there for several hundred years. And so our goal is with this book is to show you how to do it affordably, because many people, and we've talked to thousands of people over the year, are often put off by travel to Britain, thinking it's too expensive and that they can't do it and that they're going to spend a fortune. And that's not the case. You can do Britain affordably. Obviously, you have a big sunk cost to get there with plane tickets, transatlantic plane tickets. transatlantic plane tickets are super cheap right now. I mean, they're practically giving them away. You can get a ticket for $500 right now to Britain from Chicago or from New York, and maybe even less if you if you're canny with your booking. And we haven't seen prices like that since our early days of travel to Britain. So, you know, it's getting there is not as expensive as you think, and having a good experience there is can is not as expensive as you think. But there's key things you need to know so that they don't end up being expensive. Like, you know, give you an example. If you want to visit many of Britain's stately homes, many of them are owned by the National Trust. If you've never heard of the National Trust, it's a major organization and charity in Britain that protects Britain's built heritage. It's been around for over 100 years. They do fantastic conservation work, and they are a critical element of Britain's built landscape. And it's not free to visit National Trust properties. They're like museums. You have to pay an admission charge. And so the admissions to these places are can be pretty expensive. You can spend 15, 20 pounds per person to get into these places. But did you know that if you join an organization in the U.S. called the Royal Oak Foundation, less than $100 a year for a membership for a single person, then you get free admission to every National Trust property in England and Wales, and I believe in the National Trust for Scotland as well. So that has saved us so much money on our travels over the years. So it's tips like that that we put in the book that that you wouldn't necessarily know in advance. And you know, let's say you show up to Chartwell or to Stourhead or to one of the other great houses, and you're like, and you end up spending £100 for you and your family to get in. You didn't need to do that. So it's tips like that that are in this book. And so I'm gonna sort of talk to you about why this book, why now, and then I'm gonna pick 10 of my favorite tips to kind of give you a taste of what's inside. I don't feel like it's giving too much away. There's 101 tips. So if I gave you 10, maybe 11 now because I gave you the National Trust one. But so, you know, a family of four could easily spend $10,000 on a 1 to 2 week trip to Britain without even trying. You could spend a lot more than that without even trying. And our philosophy with this book is that it doesn't have to cost that much. You could probably do it for half of that. But also, we, over the years of traveling, you know, we've when we first started traveling to Britain, we were college students. We were, you know, we didn't have much money. All we had was the money we paid for the trips with from our school loans and grants that we had left over at the end of the year. I consider that Angletopia seed money. And so we didn't have much money to spend and travel in Britain. We had a one trip where through poor planning and youthful stupidity when I was 21 years old, we ran out of money. I had to make a panicked phone call to my parents from a London phone box begging for them to deposit my paycheck early so that we could have money to finish our trip. And, you know, looking back now from 42 to 22, things have changed, and things changed over the years as we built a business based on Britain, where, you know, it became less about saving as much money as possible, but also comfort and having as fun of a trip as possible and not suffering while we're traveling. But we don't believe that if you're doing budget travel right, that you have to suffer. It's just about being sensible and saving money when in the right places so that you can spend more on lodging so you're comfortable, or that you can spend more on a rental car so you can show yourself around, or you have more money to spend on souvenirs or go shopping in London on your last day. It's things like that. It's budget travel isn't about suffering. It's about spending money on the things that matter and refusing to waste money on the elements of your trip that you don't need to. And I, you know, I don't want to sound negative about Britain, but it's almost like and British people might actually even agree with this, that they get nickel and dimed when it comes to travel and tourism in their own country. Everything costs something. And that's the same here in the U.S. Everything costs something. But there are all these little things that add up to make a day out really expensive, as the British call it. And there are ways around that, you know, because it's little things like, you know, and I'll talk about this a little later with one of the tips, you know, like they charge you now to drop people off at the airport. Like it's just a, like everything costs something, or you now have to pay to, you have to pay to use the car park next to a heritage attraction in addition to paying admission to get in. So it's things like that, they add up, but there are ways to avoid those things if you plan ahead. And so that's really the goal with our books like this, is so you have this information in advance, so you know how to plan ahead and you can make the most of your trip and not waste money on things you don't need to. So it doesn't mean suffering. It means just being sensible. Let's see. Now, our books are written from a particular perspective. We're Americans from the Midwest. We have a particular worldview and a particular way of looking at things. So this book is kind of geared towards that. So, but there, if you're British and you're listening to the podcast, or if you're Canadian or Australian or from New Zealand, 90% of these tips will still apply to you and your travels in Britain. So we just, the way we write is the perspective of Americans. So that may put some people off, but a lot of the information is still gold and will still be valid no matter what country you're from. You know, we've learned so many mistakes the hard way, and I'll get into that. But one of my famous examples I like to use is we went on a business trip to England the first or second time with iPhones when international roaming was a new thing. And we thought it was great that our smartphone worked while we were traveling. We could use the map app and get where we wanted to go, and we could make phone calls and check our emails and all that stuff. Well, we didn't know that international roaming had an extra cost. And when we got home and got our phone bill the next month, we had a $1,200 phone bill from all of our adventures in Britain. And we didn't know, like, this is 2008, 2009. We just didn't know, you know? And these are things that you learn. And so from these lessons, these painful financial lessons that we've had, we're giving you this information so you, these things don't happen to you. And international roaming, again, has changed substantially in 20 years. It's much different now than it was 20 years ago. And so I'll talk about that. I actually think I'll use that as one of the tips when I do a reading later. So quick overview of the book sections before I go into and deep dive into the individual tips. There's the before you go section, which talks about the new ETA requirements, not a visa, but it costs money. And if you don't have it, it'll cost you even more money. How to find airfare deals, the right travel credit cards, packing your bags to avoid baggage fees. The next section is getting around. We talk about Britain's rail system, how you use it, how BritRail passes work, how they can save travelers money, how the fare caps work, and tips for saving money on car rentals. We talk about where to stay, affordable accommodations that aren't depressing, that aren't soulless and budget hotels that are scary to be in. We talk about eating and drinking, how you can, one of your biggest costs when you travel is going to be food and eating three meals a day. Well, we give you the tips on how to save with that. We talk about how to sightsee smart, how to, you know, which organizations to join, which ones have heritage passes and all that. We talk about the mechanics of just using your credit card or your debit card abroad and how that will cost you money and what you can expect to pay. And then we talk about safety and practical things about what happens if you lose your passport or you need to access UK emergency services or you get sick or you break a bone and you got to go to the hospital and how to avoid pickpockets. So we talk about all those things. It's an overall good guide. Best practices for traveling, not just to save your pocketbook, but also to have a good trip. So I'm going to pick 10 tips from the book and read through them and give you an idea of what you can expect from the book. So the first one we're going to talk about is the new ETA requirement. And you're like, what is that? What is the ETA requirement? So the first thing I want to talk about is actually tip number 45, and it is understanding electronic travel authorization. So we actually have a whole podcast about this, but I won't go into great detail on this, but there's a new rule for visiting Britain, and many Americans still don't know about it. So you need to get an electronic travel authorization before you depart for Britain. What is that? Well, it's not a visa. That's what everyone calls it, a visa. It's not a visa. Americans can still travel visa-free to the United Kingdom for up to 6 months. We do not need a visa to visit. The ETA is a separate thing. All it says is that you have been authorized electronically to travel to Britain. And it's a process you go through. You can do it any time before your travel. But if you don't do it and you show up at the airport, you're not going. They from, I think, actually today, February 24th, when I'm recording this, is the hard deadline where they will be strictly enforcing the ETA. If you do not have it when you are at your port of departure, you are not getting on the plane and coming to Britain. So what is it? Well, all it does is it says you are authorized to travel to Britain. And the whole, like, America's had a similar system for years called the ESTA. And so the rest of the world's like, well, what are you complaining about? You make us do it. We're not going to get into that. But what I will say is, like the ESTA, there's a whole like ecosystem of businesses that have popped up to try and help you get your ETA when you actually don't need to use a third party to get it. You do not. You do this yourself. Use the official app and you pay the fee directly to the British government, and you will save money because the services are going to charge like 60, 70, 80 pounds to do it on your behalf when you didn't need to do that. And so applying is really easy. Just use the official app. Go on the App Store for iOS or Android, and you download the official ETA UK app. Now, when you do the search for the app, what you're going to see is you're going to see ads for the third-party services trying to sell you. So make sure you download the official app from the British government. It's really easy to spot. It's a really simple app. You download the app, and then you go through the process in the app to apply for your ETA and pay for it in the app, and then you submit it, and then within minutes, usually you're approved. If you're not approved, that's a whole other problem because there's not an appeal process. But once you're approved, you'll get an email that says you're approved, and then that's it. You don't need to have the app with you. You don't need to carry a certificate. You don't need to bring anything with you to the airport. All it says is that you've done this. I would keep the record that you've done this in your email inbox or keep it on your phone, screenshot it that you've done it. But the government knows you're coming now. You have been electronically authorized to travel. And so the airline will know that. We'll check now before you board your plane. And then when you get to Britain, you use the e-gates, you scan your palm of your hand, they take a picture of you and they let you right in. They don't even stamp your passport anymore. So like I said, the key tip here is, though, don't use third-party services. You do this yourself. It's £16 as I'm recording this. It used to be £10, but they raised it. It's £16. And so anyone charging you a fee more than £16 to do this is ripping you off. So that's a key one. Another one that we discovered actually fairly recently is airport drop-off fees. So this was a sneaky one. I'd heard that there were airport drop-off fees, but it never really applied to me because we'd either take the train to the airport or we'd have somebody drop us at the airport anyway. And so but Heathrow added it fairly recently. And so this hit us on our last trip. Now, so Heathrow charges, I think it's a $5 drop-off fee. I believe they're raising it to $7. And it's basically a fee the person driving you to the airport is being charged to drop you off. And this applies to if you're using a car service too, not just random people who are dropping you off. And so the way we got hit by this was, Mrs. Engletopia and I were finishing our trip. I wanted to drop her with the bags off at the airport at the terminal, and then I would be the one stuck taking the free bus from the car rental return place back to the airport because we didn't want to do it with our bags and all that. So I did that, dropped her off, returned the car, came back, didn't think anything of it. I saw the sign that said, oh, there's a drop-off fee. I'm like, okay, I'll just have to remember to pay that. Well, as travel goes, I forgot to pay it because once you get into travel mode and getting home mode, it's easy to just forget something like that. And so what stung me was that I forgot about it until I got home. Well, what happens is the system is based on your number plate. And so there's cameras scanning your number plate. And if you have a rental car, they scan the number plate and they send the bill to the rental car company. And so, but because I forgot to pay within 24 hours, the rental car company, the fee was £100 as a penalty fee for forgetting to do it. And then the rental car company charged me £40 to process and manage the transaction. So making it easier to drop my wife off with the bags at the terminal ended up costing us £140. Like, that was not, we were not amused. When I got home, after that happened, I was not amused. And you know, you want to keep a good relationship with the rental car company. You don't want to be blacklisted. You pay the fee. So you got to watch out for those airport drop-off fees. And if you're well aware of the airport drop-off fees, don't forget to pay them. Because if you do, you will be screwed. But next is supermarket meal deals. So we have actually several tips in the book about this. About going to the grocery store. So one of the first things we do when we get to Britain is we go to the grocery store and we go buy a bunch of snacky things. We buy stuff for charcuterie, buy stuff for sandwiches, and we buy stuff for breakfast. That's the key thing. Buy stuff for breakfast. You start off with a good breakfast in the day, even if you're staying in a hotel, then you're going to have a light lunch and save your money for a more expensive, higher dollar dinner. And so we are big advocates of going to the supermarket. But if you're also self-catering, you can get the supermarket meal deal. Like for lunch, they'll have a sandwich and a drink and a bag of chips for like £3 or £4. Like, you can't beat that. And the British they do sandwiches completely differently than we do, where you have dozens of different options to choose from different kinds of sandwiches. And it's cheap. And then you just pick it up and go, and you have lunch. But also they have dinner meal deals too, where it depends on the chain, but you can get your main, your side, your dessert, and a bottle of wine for like £10 to £15. So if you're self-catering and you don't want to eat out that night, go to the supermarket, get the meal deal. You'll get a dinner for two for £10 to £15. You cannot beat that. So don't sleep on going to the supermarket. It's one of our favorite budget hacks. Next is the Oyster card. So for years, we advocated you must get the Oyster card to use London's transport system. It gives you the cheapest fare when you travel the network. You basically tap in, tap out, and no matter how many times you tap in and tap out during the day, it calculates how much you owe and how much fare is used, and you never charge above the maximum daily fare cap. Well, you can still use Oyster cards and you can still buy Oyster cards, but you don't need to use them. You don't need them anymore. They now have contactless fares where you tap, if you have a tap credit card or a debit card, all you do is tap that. And then all the same rules and everything apply. So when we went in October 2022, it was the first time we tapped with our credit cards. I use a Wise card, which I should probably get into that, but it's an international travel card. And you just tap in and out, and it lets you in. And at the end of the day, it settles up and takes the maximum fare amount of the network that you use, which is no more than like £7 or £8 a day. So you don't need to buy the Oyster card in advance. You don't need to buy it when you get there. Just use your credit card as long as you have tap on it. And make sure, again, if you're going to use your credit card like this several times a day, make sure you have a good international travel credit card. It doesn't charge you a ton of fees for international transactions. That's why I recommend the Wise card, because they don't charge any fees like that. So booking train fares. This is another key thing. There's several tips related to trains because I love trains. I love traveling by train. you know, the biggest way you can save money on train travel in Britain is to buy their Brit Rail Pass. This is something that's not available to British people. This is only available to people coming to the UK. And it's basically you choose how many days you want to use the rail line, how long you expect to be there, what class you want to be in, what kind of accommodation you want. And then you can basically get unlimited train travel for the period of that pass. And then they can cost a lot of money depending on the length of your trip. But in the aggregate, you'll save a lot of money by paying for this pass in advance than buying individual train fares to travel all the way around Britain. If you are only going to use the train in a limited capacity or once or twice or two or three times, then you don't need a Brit Rail Pass. You can just buy the train tickets from the train operators individually. There are multiple apps to help you book train tickets. There are multiple services online to help you book train tickets. You can book directly with each train operator because each region has its own train operator. This may be changing in the coming years, which I'm going to have to rip apart all the tips and write a new one when Great British Railways comes into full fruition and they finished nationalizing all the railways again. But for now, you can book train tickets up to 12 weeks out from your travel, which I actually think isn't enough, but British people think I'm weird for thinking that. And it's usually cheaper to book further in advance than it is closer in advance. You know, a same day journey can cost 4 to 5 times more than if you'd have bought it a month earlier or 2 months earlier. As you get to the 12 week mark before travel, start looking up your train ticket prices for the journeys you want to make. And if it makes financial sense, buy them in advance. Doesn't make financial sense, buy them on the day, whatever. I always recommend getting open tickets, though, so that you can take any train going to the destination where you want to go. That way you're not stuck taking a specific train to a specific place because trains are late, trains get canceled, and it just causes more headaches. So get open train tickets. So that's trains. One of the next thing I want to talk about is a tip that's actually been in the book from the first edition, and that's one of the biggest foreign currency scams that I hate. It drives me crazy. When you go shopping in Britain and you use an American credit card, more often than not, the cash register will give you the option to convert or to pay in dollars rather than convert your purchase into pounds. It's basically a legal scam because what happens is you're paying the conversion rate set by the merchant's credit card processor and their bank. So they're skimming money off of that transaction if you're converting it to dollars at the checkout, because it creates a layer between you and your credit card back home. There's fees, they take a cut. And so don't pay in dollars if you're given the option at the cash register in Britain. Do not. You're overpaying. I've seen this time and time again. Always pay in pounds, because what happens when you pay in pounds, your credit card automatically converts it to dollars anyway at the day's intermarket exchange rate. So the rate that you see on all the currency tickers, it gets it at that day's rate. Granted, your credit card may charge your bank may charge you a transaction fee for that. It's still going to be less than if you pay in U.S. dollars in the U.K. Do not pay in U.S. dollars. Never pay in U.S. dollars. You're overpaying. Pay in pounds. So if one of our lodging opinions have changed over the years as we've sought more comfort in our travel. You know, when I was a 22-year-old college student, and I was just happy to be in London, I loved the Easy Hotel chain, which still exists. These hotels are these impersonal hotels, often spread out a little further from the tourist areas, where you can pay 25, 30 pounds a night for your hotel room, and that's it. The catch is that they charge for everything, including a remote to watch the TV. Some of the rooms have no windows. There's been a whole proliferation of hotels like this since. There's now pod hotels, and like at the Trocadero has been turned into a pod hotel where you're basically in a hermetically sealed pod with no windows. But hey, you're paying 25, 30 pounds a night, and I can't do it. I have to at least have a window. When I was younger, I was fine, but I'm claustrophobic now, and I like, you cannot trap me in a windowless room and expect me to be enjoying my trip, even if it's in Piccadilly Circus. So I don't recommend these pod hotels. But if you're not claustrophobic and you don't care if there's no sunlight, you can save a ton of money staying in hotels like this. But not part of my travel goals anymore. However, if I do still want to save money, I never will not recommend Premier Inns, one of the major budget hotel chains in Britain. Consistent quality, you get breakfast included. Advanced rates can be £35 a night in near or around most major British cities or tourist attractions. Granted, you're not going to be in the best location. You might be next to the motorway. You might be a little further out than you want to be, but you can count on a breakfast and in a cheap room, clean, and the standards of Premier Inn are actually really good. So don't sleep, pun intended, on Premier Inn. It's the hotel chain every budget traveler in Britain needs to know about. And so there's hundreds of them spread around Britain. So if you want to go somewhere, see if there's a Premier Inn, you'll save money. Afternoon tea. Now, this could be one of your most expensive trip costs. Like, no joke. Back in 2022, we did London for a business trip and a conference, and we had a few extra days. So we wanted to have a luxurious high tea experience. So we did the Fortnum & Mason high tea. And it was £85 per person, which is absurd. Like, I hated paying that much for it, but I did it for, you know, to review it and do social media. So like, it's a business write-off, right? But I didn't think it was really worth £85 per person personally, even though the service was good, the food was good. That's just a lot. But you can get an afternoon high tea for half that or a third of that in many other places. We talk about that in the book, and also do some research in advance. If you want to have a nice high tea experience, there are plenty of places to have high tea that don't cost £85 per person. So this is one of my transatlantic travel hacks. Pack snacks for your flight and don't count on buying those snacks at the airport before you leave. Transatlantic airline food, it's not controversial to say that airline food is generally terrible unless you're in business class or above. I mean, it's a tray of reconstituted food made in a manufacturing facility where you beef or chicken or fish or chicken, and you don't really, like, it's just hot and it's tasteless or tastes awful. And like, however, a transatlantic flight is long, so you have to eat. And my general philosophy with business trips and travel in general is, if there's food, eat it, because you don't know when you're going to eat next. And so, you know, if you don't eat that meal on the plane, well, think ahead. You have to land yet. You have to get your bags from the, if you didn't check it, or if you didn't do carry-on only, you have to get through immigration. You have to get through customs. You have to get to where you're staying. If it's too early to check in, you have to leave your bag. Like, it could be several hours before you eat. So if you don't eat that little breakfast they give you on the plane because it was unappetizing, it's going to be a while until you can eat. So pack snacks, and don't buy them at the airport, because the airport is designed to take as much money out of your pocket as possible on both ends, not just in Britain, but in the U.S. Things in the airport, Hudson News, cost 3 or 4 times what you'd expect them to cost outside the airport. And that's just a convenience tax. And as long as you know that, then, you know, whatever, that they're just supply and demand. But there's nothing stopping you from bringing your favorite snacks with you to the airport. And so, like, the Thomas family is going on vacation in a few weeks. And so I'm already planning the snacks we're going to bring in our bags, because everybody's going to have their particular snack, and we're not going to rely on the airport or overpay at the airport. We'll just bring them with us. And so bring those snacks. Bring my favorite thing is to pack. They're called They're called Perfect Bars. They're protein bars, and they're pretty widely available everywhere. And it's a peanut butter protein bar that's like 400 calories. And so if the plain food was so bad that I'm hungry, I'll just eat one of those. I'll be fine for a few hours. And you're flying, you're traveling, pack yourself a little treat. So, and I already gave away the National Trust tip, by joining the Royal Oak Foundation. But also there's not just the Royal Oak Foundation. English Heritage has an overseas members pass. You can get that. It's good for usually the duration of your trip, and you get, free admission to English Heritage properties. There's not as many as the National Trust, but there's some key sites there. You can also join the Historic Houses Association. And if you're a member of that association, you can get free entry to about 300 or 400 privately owned stately homes like Highclere Castle, where they filmed Downton Abbey. And you don't need to pre-book those tickets. You can show up on the day and get in with that pass. Highly recommend looking into the places you want to go, seeing which organizations they're a part of, and getting those membership passes in advance, because you'll save so much money on admission. And then you can have more money to spend in the National Trust gift shop, buying a puzzle or buying teas and what have you. That's just 10 of the 101 tips in this book to save you money on your travels to Britain. If you have a trip planned in the next year, highly recommend getting the book. Read it once, take it with you, because it's compact. It will fit in your bag, and you can have it with you, give you live advice while you're traveling. I'll put a link in the show notes to the product page, and you'll see the whole table of contents. I'm not going to read off all 101 tips, but I'll link to the list so you can see what's in this book. Well worth the money, I think. I wish this book had been available when I first started traveling. It probably would have saved me a lot of money, but my loss is your gain, because now I've written the book. So it's available now directly from us, from the Angletopia store. The regular retail price is $19.99 during launch week. It's $16.99, but most people won't hear this podcast during launch week, so sorry. It's also available for booksellers everywhere. If you give them the ISBN number, they can order it for you. But of course, it's also available on Amazon. Amazon's actually our publisher, so all of our books are on Amazon. You can order directly from Amazon. They will, if you're a Prime member, they can have it to you in 2 days. And so, not only is it available in paperback, you can also get the ebook. It's available on Kindle. But we also sell a digital rights management free ebook pack on the website, which also has launch week pricing, where you buy the digital version, you get the, an EPUB, which you can put on your Kindle or any e-reader. You get a PDF, which you can read on any tablet, any computer, and you get an HTML file, a browsable HTML file that you can just read on your computer or anywhere. You can use the files however you want and view them whatever device you want. We've just tried to make it easy for you. So that's in the Angletopia store if you don't have a Kindle. And then also there's an audiobook version available through Audible, using their new AI voice program. We're trying to make all of our books available by audiobook to those who want it. If you want it, you can have an audiobook. So this isn't really something I would buy an audiobook for, but that's my opinion. If you're planning a trip to Britain in this year or next year or in 10 years, this book will pay for itself many times over. Like I said, there's launch week pricing, which ends on Friday. So I'm going to release this probably today or tomorrow. So you still have a few days left to get that launch week pricing. And if you picked up the book, or you go on a trip, please let us know how it went, how the tips worked. Leave a review, give us some feedback, let us know how that worked on your travels, and tell me which tips surprised you the most. So 101 Budget Britain Travel Tips, third edition, available now from booksellers everywhere. Thank you for listening to this special bonus episode of the Angletopia podcast. If you enjoy the Angletopia podcast, please subscribe, like, or leave a comment on the various platforms where you listen to your podcasts. If you enjoy the content we put out, please consider joining the Friends of Angletopia Club, where you get to hear this podcast early before everybody else. And you also support great long-form writing about British travel, history, and culture that you simply cannot read anywhere else. So give us a follow on social media, sign up for our newsletter. Links for everything is in the show notes as usual. Thank you so much for your time, and we hope you enjoyed the new book.